tell me about the touring process and tour stories, anything memorable, fans, you know?
Yeah, just Tim and Beth helped a lot. Beth at one time, which is Tim's wife, was the booking agent dash tour coordinator along with Tim a lot. And, you know, I knew people out there too that I helped a tiny bit, but very much of it was on Tim and Beth's shoulders because that's the job they accepted. And, you know, we sometimes didn't do very good on tour as far as stringing things together, but we also went on tour sometimes to have fun and not totally stress out. Like, it didn't have to be 6 nights a week. We would sometimes play 3 nights a week and be in New York City and want to go have fun for 2 nights, you know, or be in Chicago and let's just not play tonight, you know, let's just have fun. So that was always really cool. And, you know, meeting people like Corey Rusk and the Necros and Detroit for the first times up there and playing was just so magical, you know, and going to Kansas City and playing gigs there that were just, you know, crazy amounts of kids, being 100 degrees, but everybody's there and just wailing and having a blast. And, you know, we went to New York and played at CBGB's there and played at, you know, several other little off-site things there, and that was always so fun. Engine breaking down on the truck in the middle of nowhere, giant electrical storms up in, when we were trying to go from Minneapolis to Winnipeg, Canada, when it was like horizon to horizon, totally flat, and lightning that looked like hairnet lightning, I called it, was from sky to sky, looked like a cracked glass lightning the entire sky, and that made us sort of squinch, and we were having car trouble sitting on the side of the road doing that, you know. That was always really weird. We never really had any of our equipment, big equipment, stolen or anything, so we always did real good on the road, you know, and seemed to make a lot of friends, and we were always relatively safe on the road. And, you know, meeting people like crazy, meeting people in L.A., like Nina Hagen, who was one of the most outrageous person I ever knew in my life, and, you know, she was the German opera diva that sung punk rock also, and she was so wild, I was going, oh my God, I'm in L.A., look at this person. You know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers were just starting. They opened for us that night. We met all those people, and, you know, we played a killer fucking show right after them, and, you know, meeting Tex and the Horseheads and hanging out with them, and, you know, going to, like, the record store, and there's all of Black Flag, and they're going, dude, you dude from Austin, we didn't even know you were here, man. We got you in free tonight to the Santa Monica Civic Center, and there's, like, Adolescents and the Us and, you know, a fucking bunch of people we got in free, and I'm just going, oh, my God, I'm on top of the world. They like me. Wah. And, you know, getting free tickets in and being catered to by Black Flag in L.A. in their own hometown and going to the rehearsal space and hanging out and going, oh, my God, look at this. These guys are like the totally Waylon Kings of cool. You know, as far as what people were having fun, and I was just getting to be around, and I just thought it was so neat, you know, doing that, and going to New Orleans, and hanging out with the Red Rockers in New Orleans, and going out to Marie Laveau's voodoo store with the Red Rockers, who were like early punkers from New Orleans, like in 1980, literally is when that was, and so I've had some great times, long, horrendous drives to where you didn't think you were ever going to get anywhere, and going to California, and you drive from Austin, you drive 13 hours, and you're still in Texas, and you're halfway to California, because Texas is, from where we are, Texas stretches halfway to California, you know, and you're still in Texas, so you're driving yourself crazy, and playing with JFA, and like Phoenix, and oh my God, all those skater guys, and going to the massive reservoir skate ditches that those guys took us to, you know, those memories are just unbelievable, and I hold all those people still as my dear friends, you know, and many, many, many of them have not been able to keep contact with, but many of them I have, and I still hear the joy and the happiness in their heart of what they're still doing, you know, today, and I find that really cool, you know. It's like what we were doing back then, we're still doing to make us happy 15 to 16 years later, so I guess something was good that worked back then, because we're still hard at it now. God, I'm such a house rat, I just don't go anywhere anymore. But things like that inspire me, you know, and I've slowly have gotten back out and started going to clubs and stuff, and I'm a fuck up. I like to stay home. but it's okay. But I sure know the importance of the music scene out there. It's still so good. And Austin's dull right now, as it seems like a lot of my friends say, but it's only to us to make it not dull, you know. You get out and go have fun, and you suddenly get inspired, and things get better.
Okay, tell me about the conditions surrounding the recording sessions and about meeting Spot. Because John Slade said you had some really good stories about that. He was like, yeah, ask him this, you know.
Well, we did, you know, we did a lot of recording. Most of it all was here in Austin at different studios. And first time we ever recorded was we did that little four-song single. And we were 6 months old. We started at our first gig was like November 29th or something in 79. And in May of 80, which basically was 5 to 6 months later at the most, we'd saved every penny from the first few shows and made that single that was so rare for so long, because we only got to make like 500, that's all the money we had.
Man, it is still rare.
And it's very rare.
I mean, if you try to get that thing online, people will pay up to $300 or more for that thing.
I wish I had a million of them.
I would bid on it or something like that, and I'd be like, screw that, you know, too rich for my blood, I can't do that. I was like, I'm a college kid, they're like, these guys are spending $300 on a single. I'm like, it's a piece of plastic. I was like, geez.
God, I swear, it honors me beyond belief, but it blows my mind. You know, I mean, it just blows my mind. And that's so sweet of anybody to pay anything beyond a dollar for it. The fact that they thought it was important enough that they wanted it, it just blows my fucking mind. And I'm telling you, it's mind-boggling. You know, I've heard people say they paid $195 for it, and I just can't fathom that, you know. But I guess in the rarity of all of it, I look at all this other stuff, and they're paying it for all this other stuff, so I'm honored beyond belief. My mind is blown. I can't even begin to think that anybody would ever pay that for anything like that. But
even industry standards, really, that's another one that's really hard to find.
It is. I've got a few of those. The single I've got 3 copies of, and one is looks like a damn ashtray you make in Vacation Bible School. It's so warped. But I've got 2 of those that are good, and the industry standard, I may have 20 copies of that still. And Live at Raoul's, I've got 4 or 5 copies of that, you know, and the others I've only got like 1 and 2 copies of.
If you ever need some money, man, put those things up online. You can make some cash quick.
It's so crazy. I'm really honored and proud that Touch and Go brought it out, you know. It did stop the fact that, yes, you don't have to pay $195 for it. You can hear it, but then again, if you want the original, that's what you get. But I am really just, you know, beyond pleased that Corey thought that should come out, and that it did come out, and a lot of people get to hear that, you know, because of that. So, you know, that was all fun. Spot came to town when we recorded, I guess the Fun Sessions was the first time he came to town, and because the second thing we did, which was industry standard, was with David Bean of the Judies that we recorded in Houston. In a squinky little cracker box of a studio down there, but that's almost my favorite Big Boys record is Industry Standard, Where's My Towel? And I think we were just so raw and so diversified on that record. It really showed how diversified that band really was. I was sick. I had 104-degree temperature. I was laying on the floor. They would go, Randy, get up. It's time to sing. And I would go puke and take aspirins, and I mean, I had 104 temperature, I was so sick, and I sang that entire fucking album that night being so sick, and I begged that I could have gone back and done it again, because I knew I could have done better, my throat was hoarse, but I look back in and go, that was what happened for those moments, and I cherish that, you know. And the next recorded thing was the thing, I guess we did that Dick's Big Boy Split, which was recorded at Raoul's, and with a big old mobile recording truck that the guy pulled up in the parking lot and ran all the cords in, and that was a lot of fun because it got advertised really well with, you know, within around Austin. So there was a lot of people there, and the Dicks did a good set, and I thought we did real good. I really wasn't pleased with that record because we did over 25 songs in 2 different sets. They chose 7 of our safest songs. The Dicks did their entire set, which only consisted of about 12 or 13 songs, and they got all theirs on there, and that was all the hardcore, everything that they did, you know, and they chose some of our longer, more melodic things, so I felt it should have been better balanced with our more weird shit, and it was like everybody went, oh, the Biscuits, Big Boy's soft side, and the Dicks' hardcore side, so I got a lot of shit. Would have to go, this is what happened. They chose this, and the guy that did the record later on fessed up to saying, well, yeah, that's sort of what I did. And he promised that, like, the record starts out with Assault or starts out with something that's not even on there. We begged him to put this stuff on there that I said about, hey, man, the fucking French are here tonight. Let's and now he hollered something. He said he would put that on there to start our side out. He didn't. He left that off. So, which to me would have introduced us as like something crazy and wild to listen to, but he didn't. So our side was much safer, I felt like. And in the end, I was a bit embarrassed by it because I knew we did much better than what was represented there. Well, that one didn't make me feel too good, but I was glad to get to do it, I must admit. And then through the course of knowing Spot, and, you know, we'd gone out to California, and Tim then wanted to get Spot because he was famous, you know, and he did the Black Flag stuff and all that. And we recorded those six songs with him on Fun, 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 and had a huge amount of people come to the studio and sing on the chorus of Fun, Fun, Fun and Hollywood Swingin'. And, man, that was so cool because they set up big, you know, room mics, and all these bros and all these friends were there, and they let people bring in beer and have a real good time, you know. And so the record shows that, of everybody hollering and being real crazy in the background, you know. And that was real cool, and I thought that captured us good at that moment in time. That made me feel real good. And, you know, it was a little bit upscale, a record company being Moment Productions here in Austin that was putting a little bit of money into it. It wasn't that we were having to go find the money, you know. They believed in us enough, and that was really good, you know. It made me feel really good. And then Spot came back for other sessions that we did and was used quite extensively throughout the course of our recording career. Sometimes I really liked it, and sometimes I thought it was terribly flat, that it could have been better and we could have utilized the studio better than what it was. And I seem to suggest that, but, you know, it happened what happened, and what didn't happen, so I'm still alive. But I always think that, you know, yes, use the studio for the magic prowess that's there. If you want to double things up, go for it. You know, it's a fucking studio record. If it's live, you can't do that. If it's recorded live, you'll get what's recorded live. If it's a studio, use every one of those knobs to make it fun and exciting and full and rich. And I think we could have profited better by doing that. But we did what we did, and it stands its mark in time. And I'm proud of that.